Welcome to Between a Talk and a Hard Place, a podcast for women bringing down-to-earth conversations about the realities of our real-life experiences. I'm your host, Lisette McKenzie, author, life and mindset transformation coach, and self-concept connoisseur. And together with my girls, Alicia and Natira, we'll be discussing everything from situations to situationships and the challenges women face every day as we navigate this thing called life.
So welcome back to another episode of Between a Talk and a Hard Place. This week, we are switching from purple to pink. If you tuned in last week, you'll know that the discussion was loosely based on domestic violence, which the month of October has been dedicated to raise awareness. But October is also Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And for a lot of us, that may hit very close to home. Statistically, one out of every eight women will develop breast cancer in their lifetime. And this year, it's estimated that newly diagnosed cases of breast cancer will surpass 300,000. So hearing the word cancer can bring on a sense of dread and end-of-life thinking. But if you can push past that, you'll hear many stories of survival, much like the one you're going to hear tonight in this episode. So joining us today is Mrs. Gwen Murphy. And she'll be giving us a glimpse at what it's like living through a cancer diagnosis. So welcome, Ms. Gwen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on and sharing your story. We need to hear this. We need to hear positive outcomes out of such a bad experience.
Yes. Mom, my first question is, when did you realize that something was wrong?
Well, one morning in 2002, when I was getting ready for work, I felt a lump on my left breast. This would be one of two occurrences of breast cancer, which I would experience. I was 50 years old.
When you noticed it, what were you doing?
Well, I was just dressing and knocked against a lump that was painful to the touch. Now, I know there are stories out there that cancer is not painful to, but it is. The cancer I had was. Uh-huh. So, and the 12, 6, 3, the clock position that they tell you to examine your breast in, mine was located close to the nipple at the, I believe it was the 3 o'clock site. And as I say, I was just dressing and knocked against something that was painful. I, fooled around with it and see what it was. And it was that lump.
Wow. Wow.
Went to the doctor. Like, how did they test you and how did they diagnose you with cancer?
Okay. I went first to my gynecologist. She was white female, and we did not have a rapport. So we kind of danced around what it could or could not be, and then she sent me to a surgeon for a needle biopsy. And that is when they stick a needle in the suspected cancer area and take out the tissue and send it for testing. After it returned positive, I was referred to an oncologist. And after talking with the oncologist and the surgeon, I decided to have a lumpectomy. The cancer had found to be a stage 1.5 breast cancer. There is staging in cancer. There's 0 to 4, I believe it is. And mine was 1.5. So I had chemo and radiation. Now, my rapport with the oncologist and the surgeon, it was good. They were both male, but they were so much easier to talk to and gave me so much more information than my gynecologist had.
Wow. So with your gynecologist, and I think for a lot of women, especially Black women, when you don't have that, when you're not able to build that rapport with your doctor, a lot of things get missed and a lot of things go unsaid. So I'm glad that you had the thought, you were able to think that, you need to follow through with it, especially if your doctor wasn't taking it as serious as she should have. And I think a lot of people get swept under the rug that way. I think it's very, very unfortunate.
I don't know why, with the number of doctors we have in this country, there is no need to stay with any doctor that you are not comfortable with. This lady was condescending, and needless to say, yeah, I did not go back to her. You know, I found another gynecologist. But, you know, you don't need to be talked down to, you know. You need to be informed, and whatever bedside manner they have should show through and that sort of thing. There's no need to talk down to anyone.
Especially when it's something that could be, because at that point you did not know that it was cancer.
But it did not.
You know, when it's something that sensitive, you would expect your caregiver, your medical caregiver, to have some sort of bedside manner.
Well, right. I feel like she probably knew already, because she would not have sent me to a surgeon for a needle biopsy. Because doctors, like, she had been a doctor a long time, and she probably knew by feel that mm-hmm. it was probably a cancerous lump. But, you know, I kept trying to press her, and, you know, she wouldn't commit to it, and she couldn't really diagnose you. That's why she was sending me to the surgeon. But she could have been a little bit, to me, more forthcoming and empathetic or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I agree. You should be made to feel comfortable by your doctor. They don't have to give all the bells and whistles, but they should right. at least have a good bedside manner to not leave you feeling like they don't care about what happens to you.
Right.
So when you were diagnosed, what type of cancer were you diagnosed with?
I was diagnosed with triple negative cancer, breast cancer. And I didn't know at the time, but after doing research after my second diagnosis, I found out that that was one of the more aggressive forms of cancer.
Right. And for those that don't know, triple negative breast cancer is classified as a cancer that tests negative for estrogen, progesterone, and what's called HER2 protein, which is human epidermal growth factor receptor 2, or simply put, it's a protein that promotes the growth of cancer cells. So ultimately, with that type of cancer, treatment with the normal or the regular hormonal therapy medications or those medications that target HER2 will not be effective. So that's why it's much more aggressive, and treatment options. I'm sure I want to say that treatment options have probably gotten better, but it's still in the research stage. Mm-hmm. How did they treat you for triple negative breast cancer?
Well, the first time, radiation and chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. And after the second diagnosis, same. But you've got, as you say, things I probably have progressed now that we're in 2020. But back then, and when I was first diagnosed in 2002, mm-hmm. and the second diagnosis in 2005, the options were a lumpectomy or a mastectomy. So I did a little bit more research after I got the second diagnosis. I even went for a second opinion. Uh-huh. And the oncologist they referred me to was in Chapel Hill. And I weighed all the information they gave me and decided after my second diagnosis to just have a mastectomy on the left breast. And by this time it had advanced to stage 3.5. And if I had done my research during the first diagnosis, I think I probably would have had a mastectomy the first time and not the lumpectomy.
Right. So when right. when you were diagnosed the second go round,
mm-hmm.
what happened? What did you feel another lump?
I found it again myself. Mm-hmm. It, on the same breast, in the scar tissue of the lumpectomy, was a growth. And I prayed it was just scar tissue because, you know, there are scar tissue when you remove right. tissue. So they did one of those tests, and it was cancer again. It was cancer again. So, and And by that time, it was a stage 3.5. So.
Wow.
So, Mom, at that time, in 2005, like how, when you were diagnosed the second time, how did you approach telling your family? How did you build a support system? Just how did you kind of deal with things?
Well, I played that to my family. I was trying to keep their spirits up and protect them. To you and your father, I tried to put on a happy face and be the same old, same old. And to everybody else, the same. But privately, I was scared to death. And I had some people that I talked to more honestly than others. I did not have, you know, a support. I was not involved in a support group or anything like that, which I probably should have been. But, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and I did the best I could with what I had.
So you were, as is the matriarch of most families, you put on this strong persona because you wanted to do it for your family. You didn't want them to be afraid. And you ultimately put your feelings on the back burner, you know, how, what you were dealing with, you kind of put it on the back burner because you didn't want it to show. You didn't want it to affect.
I didn't want to disrupt their lives, but looking back on it, their lives, the minute those words escaped my mouth, their lives were disrupted. So
absolutely.
I guess I got the biggest relief from a journal. I got a journal and I wrote down my thoughts there with, you know, putting it on paper. You can be as honest as you want to and admit how scared you were and, you know, just write it out. And that helped me a lot, keeping that journal.
Right. And Alicia, how was it growing? How was it living with your mom? How was it being diagnosed with your mom? Because ultimately that was a family thing, you know, wasn't just Miss Gwen that that had cancer. That ultimately meant that your dad had the cancer, you had the cancer. So how was that? What was it like?
For me, it was hard because the year before I just lost my paternal grandmother who I was very close to. So I was acutely aware of like mortality and things like that. And when Mom was first diagnosed, I was a freshman in high school. So I was already in the middle of like a big life change. And then when that happened, it was just really upsetting. But like she said, she wanted to kind of portray to my dad and I that everything was the same and we both knew it wasn't. So we tried, I think we all tried for each other not to feel as, not to seem as downtrodden or scared, but I honestly think we all were. It's just hard to talk about. So the first time happened, you know, seemed like everything cleared up. The doctor gave Mom a good report, but then when the second time came around, it really just kind of threw us for a loop, like, I think my dad and I were both just so scared, but we didn't know how to say to each other, hey, this is scary. But somehow I think we just kind of pressed forward. But looking back on it, it's definitely like a formative moment, not only for me, you know, in my adolescence, but just like us as a family. It brought us closer. Mm-hmm. And it also just made us realize how fragile life is. But yeah, it's definitely harrowing. It's definitely scary. But, you know, like my mom was saying, it might have been better if we were all just a bit more honest about our feelings with each other.
Right. And so was there a family history of breast cancer? Is there a family history?
And as far as I know, not on my mother's side or my father's side. Now, we haven't really investigated our family history or anything, but as far as I know, now I know my father's mom died really, really young and nobody really seems to know what of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that could have been cancer. But, you know, back then and even now there's a stigma placed mm-hmm. on cancer and any sort of AIDS. Diseases like that carry a stigma. So,
right,
as absolutely. I say, someone may have been diagnosed, but, you know, as far as we know, not. And then one of my sisters did something for the rest of the female members of the family, and she had been diagnosed in the last few years with cancer. So she took that BRCA test, the gene test, to, you know, see if we carried the gene, and evidently we do not. And so we were happy that she did that for us. But she had another form. She did not have the triple negative. She had mm-hmm. the type that was in her milk ducts. So mm-hmm. ductal carcinoma, I believe they call it.
Okay. And I think it's important for everyone to know that just because there is no trace of family history with breast cancer does not mean that you're safe
right.
from getting it, because statistically, I believe it's 70% of women, I think men are included in that, but 70% of people diagnosed with breast cancer do not have a family history.
Right.
So it's important.
It makes me feel like it might be environmental, something we're introducing into our bodies maybe that.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know. That's just my opinion.
I think so too.
Because, yeah. Mom, what you did mention is you were working a high-stress job both yeah, times. So do you think that had kind of an effect on your health?
Oh, yes, that definitely contributed to the onset probably and the spread, because I was and I still tried to work that job while I was undergoing treatment. Mm-hmm. Until I just say I can't do it anymore. But I was doing payroll, accounts receivable, accounts payable, wow. A travel expense, fixed assets. It was, and trying to go to school too.
So you were wearing that superhero cape, so it was battered. You just wore it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And my body took the punishment for it. So.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's just, as women, I think that's what we do. We don't stop. We don't take the time to really take care of ourselves.
Rest and regenerate.
Because everything
we try to be everything to everybody, yes. And that's just not possible. And say yes when we should be saying no sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. And some people think that saying no is selfish, or because you're the mother or you're the wife, you're obligated to take on all this responsibility. But really, you're obligated to make sure that you are well. Because now something happens to you, what happens with the rest of the family?
Yes, right. This is a matter of self-preservation. You really can't even preserve the family if you don't preserve yourself first.
Absolutely.
You know, you have to give yourself the time to heal and recharge and rejuvenate, and so you can take the family through. Although I did, my daughter and my husband were admirable. They did. I mean, I tried to take my chemo and my radiation on the last appointment they could give me on Friday, so that I stayed in the bed all day Saturday and Sunday, and then come Monday I would start again. And in that time they did everything, the laundry, the grocery shopping, the preparing of the food, they did everything. Plus their normal activities. She was still in high school and my husband worked a full-time job, so.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that you
But
had
as she
that
said,
support.
It did bring us together as a family.
Yeah, I'm glad that you had that support. A lot of people do not have that support. And what you said about writing in a journal, that's actually a good way to release what's going on in your head, especially if you don't know how to broach it with your family. You don't know how to have those conversations with your family. Writing it down is a way of getting it out of your head and funneling all of that negative, extra negative energy through your body.
Yeah.
And speaking of writing, you were a contributing author to a book. What was that book?
is We Survive to Thrive, mm-hmm. Life-Changing Stories of Breast Cancer Survivors. And I would recommend this book to anyone that is going through cancer or just going through a hard time in their lives. These stories are from women from different parts of the country, different walks of life, and how they got through cancer.
Awesome. And I'm gonna drop that link. Hopefully our listeners will head over to Amazon and get that book. I think support like that is needed. Just to hear other women who have gone through or who are going through something as scary as breast cancer, because honestly, the thought of it alone is so
terrifying.
Numbing. Yeah.
It is terrifying.
And it's even if you have family, even if you're close with your family members, I can see how easy it would be to feel isolated because it's you know, you're going through. It's always me. And you wonder why me. I know someone who said that she doesn't wonder why me, because to her that implies that she wishes it would have been someone else. And the way she explained it, it made so much sense to me, because you don't want to wish that on anyone else. You don't want to have it either, but you don't want to wish it on anyone else. So now that it's on your plate, it's in your lap, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to address it?
Yeah, you've got to deal with it the best you can.
Absolutely.
And I've been asked that question, you know, asked that question, pardon me, before. Say, did you ever think, why me? And I say, why not me? You know, why not me?
Mm-hmm.
Why, you know, it's part of life's journey to struggle. Mm-hmm. And that was my biggest struggle, I would say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't imagine. I know I had my aunt passed away a few years ago. I think it was 2001 or 2002. And she had cancer, and we didn't know. I don't know how long she actually had it, but she didn't tell us. She didn't want to tell us. No one knew. And one day she called my mom. She didn't want to do the radiation, the chemo. She didn't want to do any of that. She wanted everything to be homeopathic. And one day she called my mom in excruciating pain. And when we went over there, she finally told my mom that she had breast cancer. And by that time, the cancer had really just eaten away at her breast. And what she was doing to, so that we couldn't really tell, she was packing her bra with a pamper so that it wouldn't be noticeable. And she went through that pain for so long. Like I said, I don't know how long she knew that she had it, but for it to be the way it was when we finally found out, she was in pain and suffering by herself for a long time because she didn't want to burden us with a cancer diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tragic.
It's
tragic, but I think her story is not the only one. I think a lot of families feel like they would be a burden when you have something, a diagnosis that big. You know, they don't want to be
that,
a burden.
I've mentioned this before, but there's a stigma to having something like it shouldn't be. But there is a stigma to having cancer. And you know how the community is when someone's been stigmatized like that. And that's hurtful. So.
Yes, you don't want to be judged. You don't want to be treated differently.
Differently, right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But at the end of the day, you have to say, you have to accept that you are sick. That doesn't mean that you're helpless, but that does mean that you may need some help. And you got to call on your tribe. You got to call on your crew, on your family.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully they will rally around you and keep you uplifted as you go through this journey. And I'm so glad that you are sharing this story. And I'm hoping that someone is listening. And if they have not already, if they've been diagnosed and have not spoken about it, have not told anybody, I'm hoping that just understanding that they do need that support even if it's not from family, there are support groups. And right. I'm gonna hopefully be able to find some links to some support groups that I'll leave below. But you don't want to suffer alone. You shouldn't have to. Mm-hmm. You really shouldn't have to. So, Ms. Gwen, what do you want to share as a survivor? What do you want to share to women who are potentially at risk?
Well, the first thing I would tell them is to not to go to a doctor's appointment, especially a diagnostic doctor's appointment when you're finding out test results or whatever. Do not go alone. Take somebody with you that is clear-headed and will take notes and make notes. I went alone, and that was one of the biggest mistakes I ever made in my life. I don't even remember how I got home. I was a total mess.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The second thing I would tell them is get a mammogram. As you said, there are organizations that do fund those for those of us that, you know, don't have insurance. There are organizations that will pay for a mammogram. I would tell them to do self-exams. It's your body. You need to try to stay on top of any changes that you might notice in it. Mm-hmm. And don't let a doctor or anybody else talk you out of getting a second opinion. I think that's important to get. I probably should have gotten one the first time I was diagnosed, but I was just in shock and didn't really know what to do. With the second diagnosis, I researched more. And that's another thing I would tell people to do. Research and find out about your cancer. There are so many different kinds of cancer out there. And you need to know what yours is and how it should be treated.
Absolutely.
And as you said, seek support from other survivors. And just make time for yourself. You can't be everything to everybody. You've got to have some downtime.
Absolutely.
And finally, I would say to pray. I don't consider myself a religious woman, but this experience opened me up spiritually. So pray without ceasing.
Absolutely. To backtrack to what you said about not letting the doctors talk you out of a second opinion. Also, don't let your doctor talk you out of what you're feeling within your body.
Yeah.
I think, and I've experienced it myself where I didn't feel right. And it was nagging. It was just really nagging. And it was nothing serious, but it was there. And my doctor kept telling me, oh, no, you're fine. Yes, they went through all the education. Yes, they are an expert in their field, but you are the expert of what you're feeling.
Body. Yeah.
Yes. So if there's something that is nagging you, if there's something that is off about your body, it's your doctor's job to listen to you. And if your doctor does not want to listen to you, then you need to seek a second opinion. It's not cheating on your doctor. I've actually had someone tell me they felt like they were cheating on their doctor. I promise. By seeking a second opinion, she felt like she was cheating on her doctor. But that second opinion told her something that her doctor didn't. So if it takes cheating, then please cheat. This is the only time I will condone cheating.
Yeah.
Cheat on your doctor. But if you have something nagging going on with your body and you feel like you are not being heard, find someone else to listen.
Well, it may save your life. It may save your life. Sometimes docs, there are different kinds of doctors with different mindsets.
Mm-hmm.
Some have the mindset that they know all, be all, you know, they're the cat meow, as they used to say back then. But there are some that really want to listen to you and help you feel better. So it behoves you to get a second opinion.
Yep, listen to your body. Do those self-checks at home. Do your regular physicals. I know with gynecological exams, the pap smears and everything, now the insurance companies are saying, oh, you don't have to have another one for 5 years. And I'm like, well, I have this thing every day of every year, so I think I need to get it checked next year. This 5-year wait might be okay for you, but I need mine checked.
That's That's time for cancer to devastate your body. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So pay attention to what your body is telling you.
Yeah.
So any final words, Alicia?
Thank you, Mom, for sharing your story and for just being a great mom and a great role model, not only to me, but to so many people. So I'm just very thankful you were able to share this with everyone.
Oh, thank you, Alicia. You don't know how much that means for me to hear you say that.
And I'm
hope I have
blushing.
Helped somebody. Remember, I adopted you.
You are
so you're my daughter too.
You are stuck with me. Alicia has a sister. Oh my gosh. But Ms. Gwen, I do appreciate you coming on and sharing the story and speaking so openly and giving your personal / professional advice on what women need to do with their body, how they need to listen to their body, how they need to seek second opinions, and how they need to seek support. And you also gave a wonderful idea for journaling. And then look at you, you went and you co-authored a book that is out there waiting for somebody to read it and can help. So I thank you for that.
Thank you for having me. And I pray this helps somebody somewhere. So.
It will. It will. Thank you. Keep the conversation going. Join the Facebook group Between a Talk and a Hard Place and share your thoughts about this week's episode.